Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales for April 2013 through Diamond to retailers. This, of course, includes trades, hardcovers, collected editions, omnibuses, masterworks, essentials, any collected edition of any sort that actually makes it onto the list. And the lowest price we have this time around is $3.99, so collected edition doesn't have to be that thick. Again, $3.99 for a collected edition, that's a stretch. I'm sorry.
It always is when a number like that comes up, I know. Like,
come on. All right, so looking at the breakdown of the top 300 trades by units, 37.37% went to Marvel with 129 items on the list. Now, only 32 of those are new, so they've got 97 reorder items, which is just about a third of the list right there. It's kind of crazy. DC... 27.35% of the units for the top 300, with 74 total items, 19 of which are new, 55 are reorder. And then Image, with 16.41% of the units, 34 of those items are total items, with 8 of those being new, 26 being reorder items. And of course, the heavy, you know, reorder items on the trade list, no big surprise, that's really the bread and butter. What's interesting, though, is just how many, you know, new trades are coming out and stuff on just a recurring basis. I mean, everything's getting collected and stuff, yet only about 111 of the items on the list were new items. You know, the majority of them, well, and again, 97 right there was just Marvel. You know, there's only 189, you know, or there was 189 reorder items on the list.
That's very lower than normal.
You know? I think so. Yeah. And also, again, we expect a lot of reorder activity, but with everything getting collected, and if it's not making the list, how's it doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I noticed looking at the top 300 this time around is only the top dozen items placed above 3,000 units. You know, and figuring maybe 2,000-3,000, you know, retail outlets out there, you know, on average, most of these books aren't getting into most items aren't getting into every store.
Right.
A lot of these items probably shouldn't go into every store because I don't think there's necessarily an audience for them everywhere. But there is, I think, still a little bit of the presumption that, well, it'll always be in trade, I can always go find it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some trades that are just a lot harder to find than I think some people realize.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, even Marvel is cutting back on a lot. You know, they're not making hardcovers of everything. They're going straight to trade and softcovers.
Well, and it begs the question, are we getting to the point where digital is starting to eat into the trade and collected edition sales? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. But it used to be if you missed the individual issue, your choice was to get the collected edition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, well, you can just go hop on Comixology and go get the issue you're missing digitally. Now, whether people are doing that or not, you know, we don't have the digital sales to know. But, I mean, this was not, you know, an incredibly stellar month for trades. Top item on the list was reorder activity, Walking Dead Volume 1. 6,925 units. Now, under 7,000 for the top item. We've had that quite a few times before, but we've also had a number of times a much higher top item.
Mm-hmm.
The next item, which is the second volume of the Manhattan Projects trade, 5,014 units. So that just barely scraped above the 5,000 mark. And then from there, it kind of goes down. Image actually had a good month in terms of placement on the list because they had the top four items. Rank number three was the Happy Trade Paperback with 4,817 items, and then some reorder activity on volume one of the Saga Trade Paperback with another 45,085 units, putting its total reported sales around 45,459 units,
mm-hmm.
which is just staggering because it really hasn't been out that long. That first came out in that trade in October.
It's got such critical acclaim, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and I talked about this with Derek Royal, who's the co-host on the comics, Mayor Report Comics episode this time around, about how Image is placing a number of items on the top 100 list for the comics, with Walking Dead, Saga, they had Jupiter's Legacy, East of West. You know, if they can get a couple of these other titles doing kind of the back, or not the back, the collected edition, you know, sales that Walking Dead does, and certainly Saga here is showing a definite trend in that direction, you know, that could really be a game changer over the coming year or so for Image.
Well, speaking of that, I noticed that this time around, John, Walking Dead Days Gone By is at $14.99, when usually that book was always at $9.99. And I think we talked about this a few months ago, that the price for this book was going to go up, and sure enough, here it is, and it still sold very well.
Yeah. I mean, it made sense for them to keep it at $9.99, like they've done with the Saga first volume.
Mm-hmm.
Lower the entry point for that first installment, get people in the door. But frankly, you don't really need that for Walking Dead anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to what, volume 17, 18?
Something like that, yeah. And they're all at $14.99, I believe.
Well, and they're all selling incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not like it's a untested, unknown property anymore. So doing the Lost Leader and stuff for as long as they did made sense, because let's face it, it was about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Changing the price now, that's not unreasonable.
Mm-mm.
You know, I certainly don't see it as a cash grab or anything of the sort. It's money well earned. Flip side, I'm sure they could have afforded to keep it at the $9.99, given how well it sells.
Sure. You wonder if they would have sold a few more copies, too. I mean, there's that balance.
At this point, do you think people were still on the fence and would have been swayed by the price, or...
They probably didn't think twice about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, the people who would have been swayed by the price, yeah, I would hope would have already gotten it at the $9.99 or found a copy still on the shelves at that,
yeah,
price. You know, obviously price is always a factor in a sales decision, but I think after a while it becomes a little less so. You know, and again, when a property's been around 10 years.
Right, right.
Now, most of the other top 10 items were all DC. We've got Punk Rock Jesus at rank number 5 with 4,547 units. And then a couple of Batman titles with Batman Detective Volume 1, Faces of Death at 4,386. Then Batman Detective Comics Volume 2, Scare Tactics, this is the hardcover, 4,139. This is the sort of thing that drives me nuts. One of them is listed as Batman Detective, the other is Batman Detective Comics.
Oh, I thought you did that for the spreadsheet.
No. That's how they're doing
it. That's wonderful.
Hey, again, to most people, not a big deal. For my system, it's just enough of an annoyance, you know?
Yes, I can see that.
And
then the Killing Joke under that.
Yeah, Killing Joke, it's been, whew, on the list 61 times before. What's interesting is it has yet to crack the 100,000 mark on this list, as far as I can tell. This is for the hardcover.
This is the recent hardcover, right? It must be for the recent deluxe hardcover.
I have this one as first shipping on March of 2008.
Yes, that would be the one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the
one. Whereas, again, if you go for just the Killing Joke, the prestige format, I'm curious how well that's been doing. That's gone through so many printings.
Oh, yeah. I've got a printing of that in the basement, like a second printing or something like that. Yeah.
That's one of the must read Batman stories, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Without
And then Swamp Thing Volume 2, Family Tree trade paperback, some reorder activity on that, 3,822. And then rounding out the top 10 is the sole Marvel entry in the top 10. And that's the reorder activity for the first volume of the Hawkeye trade paperback with 3,654 units. And that's getting a lot of critical acclaim, too. So it's interesting.
That's a good book. Yeah, for sure.
I'm really liking it. And Two of the titles I charted out from my comic book resources article this time around, Hawkeye and Daredevil. Both of those had a bit of a drop from their first issues to their second, but then more or less kind of leveled out and quickly kind of found their audience or whatever. On the one hand, that's good because it didn't keep dropping, as a lot of titles do. On the other hand, they've had enough time since they leveled out to that point that I'm surprised they haven't been growing. You know, particularly Hawkeye, which is getting a lot of buzz, and again, Mark Waid's Daredevil getting a lot of good buzz, too.
Well, Mark Waid in general is getting a lot of good buzz. He's doing a lot of great stuff.
When has he not?
Right, I know, I know.
He's a very, very talented writer.
Mm-hmm. No, that Thrillman stuff he's got going on, Insufferable, you know, and Daredevil and his other properties, just he's hitting on all cylinders, you know? Yeah. It's great to see.
Yeah, I really enjoy his writing. And what gets me is what he does is appropriate for each title.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's got one story and he just crams it into wherever he's at. And there are a couple of books out there, and I'm thinking particularly Captain America over at Marvel, where regardless of what I think of the quality of that story does not strike me as a Captain America story. You could have done that same story with Cable, with Punisher, with Nick Fury, with Wolverine, with half a dozen different characters.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that kind of weakens it a little. But, you know, after we drop out of the top dozen and stuff, again, we're below that 3,000 mark. By the time we drop out of the top 42, which is a nice round number, of course, we're below 2,000. So we've got a lot of items on the list that are just selling, you know, kind of okay. Now, granted, a lot of these things are reorder this time around, as we talked about, but that means there was nothing new that kind of, you know, sold better than that and therefore bumped it down the list. So I'm wondering if either there's I don't want to say too much new stuff on the periodical side, but what is it that's kind of causing just a weak month on some of these sales? You know, is it a lack of interest in the titles? Is it... you see what I'm saying? It's not like it's a January. It's like, well, everyone's still paying off their holiday credit cards and stuff like that, so okay, we expect it to be low or something. This is April. You know, they should be getting their tax rebates or whatever. Maybe people are paying their income tax and don't have money for trades. I don't know. It just seems a little odd.
Yeah, maybe people are just saving up for summertime. You know, these cycles are strange, you know, especially, you know, with the Iron Man movie coming out, and we see a lot of Iron Man titles on the top 300 here because they got them, Marvel got them out before the movie here. And so you had to pre-order these books back in January, February to get them out for April. So overall, I know on the comic side, because you and Bob talk about it, comic sales are up overall. You know, we're at a great industry right now, and probably in a very, very long time, it seems like.
Well, again, it depends how you define up.
Yeah.
Because one of the things, and again, Derek was who I had on this time around since Bob's stepping down and stuff, but both the aggregate of the top 300 in April for comics was down around over 400,000, and the net gains and losses was a loss of over 400,000 and stuff. The total for the top 300 obviously is the sum of the total of what was in the top 300 in April versus what was in the previous month of March and how that changed. So sales went down that way. But that's influenced by, do new high-profile items come in and lower ones go out, or did a high-profile one go out, you know, which was the case with, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, number one, selling, you know, 100,000, 200,000 more than the second issue did in April.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the gains and losses, what I do is I compare each issue on the list with the previous issue I can find. Normally that is the previous issue. Bottom of the list, it may be two or three back. And that reflects the actual general trend of our individual titles kind of going up or going down. And almost always that general trend is titles are going down. But in the New 52 is a great example of this. Publishers rotate in new titles to replace ones that aren't doing as well. You know, so as, you know, a lower selling DC title gets, you know, down in the 10 to 20,000 range, they'll rotate that out, often replace it with something that initially is doing multiple times that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it continues to do that or they wind up rotating that out 8 months later, whatever, you know. Depends on the individual titles, of course. I think we're in a very interesting time, though, right now, because the properties are generally widely accepted. Nobody's looking down at comics as, oh, that's just for kids or anything. They'll go see the movies. They love the properties.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't translate necessarily into sales either on the trades or the comics side, but we're in a point where there's just some great material coming out. Sales are sliding a little, but they're not, like, plummeting for the most part, unless you count second-issue drops at Marvel, which are insane sometimes, like 50 or 60%. But that's as much a reflection of the multiple cover gimmicks and things like that.
Mm.
We also tend to have titles, again, like Hawkeye and Daredevil, that are pretty much leveling out very well on the monthly side, and then we've got some places like Saga here on the trade side where, yeah, they're just steady sellers. So, you know, is the general trend up, down, left, right? You know, it really depends what metric you're using to measure it. You know, I think we're in a very good time and on the precipice of incredible opportunity, because with digital we've got a entry ramp for new comic book readers out there like we've never had before since the spinner rack. And even very different than the spinner rack, because you were limited to what you could find there, whereas now you could be at the office talking to a coworker or whatever, say, oh, you know, you really liked Star Wars and Star Trek or whatever? You know, they've got these comics right here. Hey, pull out your iPad or, you know, your Android tablet or whatever.
Oh, sure. I mean, I did that, you know, with one of my coworkers. You know, he reads comics, and we're always talking, and I told him to pick up the Valiant books and just start with, you know, EXO or something like that, and Bloodshot or... I think I said pick up EXO and Shadow Man. Those are my two favorites. And, you know, he was very glad I turned him on to it. And how did he get it? Got it digitally. You know, he just tested a few out and went on Comixology. And, you know, that's how he did it. And that's how he's going to be reading it. You know, it's just great.
Well,
you can catch up so easily.
Exactly. As soon as you get done with one, you can go get the next.
Yeah.
It really just comes down to how quickly does the material come out. And I think a portion of those digital readers will migrate to print eventually. You know, we certainly have not seen digital gutting print sales or anything.
Right.
But, you know, when publishers are saying, oh, but it's so additive, it's bringing people into the stores. I'm not totally seeing that either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're, again, at a very interesting time. You know, 2 years ago, digital was still kind of on the verge of coming soon with the advent of the new 52 day and date digital and pretty much everybody following suit not long after for the most part. You know, digital is here and has been for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. Well, digital's been around a lot longer than the iPad has. I mean, going back to 2005 and 2004, I got PDFs emailed to me.
It's one thing
talk about digital or not. I mean, you know.
Well, it's definitely digital, but it's one thing to have existed versus being ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You know, and certainly over the last year or two, it's gotten to where it is predominant. Just like how, and you may be able to help me with the time frame here, at one point trade paperbacks existed. The Judas Contract, the Great Darkness Saga, what was the X-Men one?
Camelot, you know.
Camelot 3000 and stuff, Watchmen. You know, they existed. Stores would have them. Now, stores have huge trade paperback sections.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere that kind of flipped over and hit that tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that the industry is not really totally adjusted to this change yet, and I think it may still be a while before we have. But I'm reading some books that are clearly digital first, where I think the pacing is a bit faster, the issues are a bit denser because of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, a counterbalance to the downside of the collected edition where people would write for the trades.
Oh, well, I think that's going to continue throughout. You know, that's it seems like no matter if the story arc is six or issues or whatever. That's the days of the 1970s individual trade or individual comic of Iron Fist or Luke Cage are gone. You know, it's you're definitely the story arc is 4, 5, 6 issues. You know,
but go down to rank 23, and we've got Smallville season 11 volume 1, The Guardian trade paperback, 2,367 units.
Digital first, right?
Digital first.
And Arrow Legends, you know, same thing, right?
So these are things that were done in like 10-page installments.
Mm-hmm.
Three or so were collected those chapters into an issue. A bunch of those issues were collected into this trade paperback. So I've got to imagine this trade paperback is going to feel a lot denser than a lot of the items kind of around it on the list,
mm-hmm.
which are, I mean, telling one story over a longer period.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be as much a perception issue as anything else, because it's not necessarily that these digital first things have more story in so much as they have more ending beats, if you will, to the story,
mm-hmm.
that they need to kind of you know, have enough of dramatic tension or whatever to get you back that next week or that next installment. And I think as more creators play in the digital area, in that sandbox, they're going to find what works, what doesn't. And that's why I'm very excited about what Wade is doing with Thrillbent. He's very actively experimenting in that playground. And I think that's going to change storytelling somehow for comics.
Well, and just last month, I mean, it's funny. We podcast just a few days after Brian K. Vaughan's Private Eye. You know, we did it last month, and then Private Eye just came out, last Thursday or something like that, just, 5 days ago from now. And, that's another great experiment. Pay for what you want and download it for free and share it and DRM free. And it's just a lot of people are just experimenting, which is great to see,
Well, and what's exciting is how many of these experiments are literally banking on the content.
Yeah.
Pay what you think it is worth is banking on the content.
Mm-hmm.
On the periodical side, Aspen and Boom are both doing a lot of $1 first issues, thinking if we can get people in the door at a lower price point and they like it, they'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether
and Dark Horse has experimented with, the reissues of The Walking Dead for $1.
Yeah.
Valiant has reissues for $1. Granted, they're all like the number ones. I haven't seen a number twos come out yet, but still, you have those out during Free Comic Book Day or something like that, and they'll sell,
Yeah.
Great to see.
But, Free Comic Book Day is another interesting point. I mean, the $1 issues, the idea is, again, you pay the lower price, get in. Whether that pans out for the publishers or not, typically that second issue has a huge drop based on, how much more expensive the second issue is.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting with Free Comic Book Day is that's another one where you give people that first sample for literally nothing in that case. We've been doing Free Comic Book Day as an industry for, 10 years thereabouts? Maybe a little more?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really don't think that the sales we're seeing now are fundamentally different than what we were seeing 10 years ago. In terms
of... No, you know what has changed for Free Comic Book Day is there are a lot more free comic book titles. I mean, this year was, 56? Something like that. 10 years ago, there was, 20?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's gotten into the game, which is great to see.
And some of the publishers are doing some great stuff with it.
Well, Peterson's hardcover for Mouse Guard. I mean, that is a great experiment too,
Yeah. So I think there are definite venues for getting material into the right hands. I think in some cases the readers keep coming back, in other cases not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever kind of cracks that nut and more importantly institutionalizes that answer, in other words, has that brilliant aha moment, if such a thing can even be had, and then is able to say, I get what brings readers back, I get how to do that, and magically know how to do it for almost any title under the sun, wow, that's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm not saying any such magic bullet really exists, but I've got to imagine that there's something out there that could work better, there are some simple things that could be done that make the stories that a lot of us read when we first got into comics stick better in our minds, grab us more intently, and keep us hooked than many of the titles are doing now.
Well, and you bring up a good point. That is, you've got to get your material to the audience that it is intended for, or else they might miss it. I mean, companies have really got to focus on advertising their product and get it out to the masses. And that's a big problem. But you can do that in digital form. You really can.
Well, that was one of the things Derek and I talked about, specifically with IDW.
I have to listen to that podcast.
Yeah, well, I've recorded it. I haven't gotten it up yet. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's not up yet?
No.
Oh, okay.
It'll be up, up. 2 days after we record this and 2 days before this goes up. So it's time travel, listeners. You'll love it. At rank 14, Star Trek Countdown into Darkness trade paperback from IDW, 2,809 units. The Countdown series Star Trek did before the previous movie was integral to that movie. Haven't seen this movie yet because it's not out yet. As to whether this Countdown into Darkness will be as integral to that movie as the other one was, don't know.
I don't know. I read this series, and just by speculation, it had nothing to do with the movie coming out, but I can be very wrong. I really didn't see it.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting how they brought April into it. I thought that was really cool. But, you know, who knows? It'll be interesting to see if they reference April in the movie.
It'll be very interesting. The question I have, though, is do you think there are more than 2,800 or so people that are going to watch the movie that might have found this story interesting?
Who knows?
Oh, come on. You've got to say yes. How can
there not be more?
That 2,809 people. I don't know how big the average movie theater is these days.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing, but I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's funny, you mentioned this, and there's also, like, the Extremis is on reorder here, too. You know, so is that, I mean, it's the same thing, almost.
But that's my point, when you had mentioned advertising and stuff like that, and getting this stuff in front of the right audience. You know, Star Trek is popular. Whether it's the height of popularity it's had, who knows, probably not. But still, I've got to imagine there's more than about 2,800 comic book reading Star Trek fans out there. And again, some of this, they may have read it on the monthly side like I did or something. But I've got to hope that they haven't fully tapped out the potential audience for this material.
I hope not.
You know, likewise with Doctor Who, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. You know, there are a lot of properties out there that people are familiar with and just simply may not know.
Is Doctor Who selling well?
Well, it depends how you define well. I mean, over on the monthly comics side.
Better than Star Trek?
Let's see. Doctor Who Prisoners of Time, 14,652. Let me filter this down real quick just to IDW since it does both.
Putting you on the spot. I usually do that.
Yeah, Doctor Who, number 8, 10,413. And it's funny because, again, Derek and I talked about this. However, Star Trek Countdown to Darkness outsold Doctor Who Prisoners of Time by about 1,100 and so units.
Okay. Yeah.
And the monthly Star Trek must not have shipped in that month because I'm not seeing it.
Now then, I wonder how well Doctor Who is selling over in Europe compared to Star Trek.
That would be very interesting to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a cultural bias towards Doctor Who over the Star Trek stuff?
I would assume they would.
I would kind of hope they would.
Yeah, I would hope they would. Yeah.
I mean, and frankly, given the
they
quality...
They certainly do with 2000 AD. I mean, you know.
Well, and frankly, given the quality of the TV show of Doctor Who versus the television Star Trek stuff, I'm going to say Doctor Who is a tighter, better written series by and large.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it's just a question of how big are the potential audiences for these properties, and do the majority of those people know about these comics?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a coworker who's big into Star Trek and Star Wars and stuff, and I'm like, hey, did you know they're doing these comics for Star Trek that had tied into the first movie? And, oh, no, didn't know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when the first movie came out and then the series picked up in the comics, it was nice to see the storyline continue. But then as Countdown to Darkness was being filmed, it seemed like the writers of the comic, and yeah, I know they oversee, kind of like same with Star Wars, you know, Lucas Books oversees Star Wars, and the Star Trek guys oversee the IDW guys working on the comic. You know, I understand that. So they kind of had to scale back and do these individual storylines of, you know, how Scotty got into Starfleet, you know, or you know, and that kind of thing, or how Chekhov and Sulu met each other for the mm-hmm. So they get kind of these origin stories, which kind of lost me for the first few issues. You know, I don't really need to know that background information. So I can't wait for, you know, the Star Trek stories to pick up again. I want to see another, you know, 6-issue arc coming out of this.
I mean, I'm liking those origin stories and stuff. It's fun to see how the new timeline's a little bit different, how it's the same and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I also really enjoyed when they would do kind of the new Trek universe take on Trouble with Tribbles and some of those.
Sure. Oh, that was fun. Yeah.
So it's a question of can they
chart... Well, no, that's what I hope they get back to. I want to see that as opposed to an origin story.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's time and a place for both. And maybe if they had been alternating between or something like that, that might have worked.
Mm-hmm.
But I think giving them a little time.
That's not to say I need to see a reworking of every episode from the 60s. You know, I don't care about that. Maybe something brand new we could see.
Well, and that's the trick, is how do you pave new ground without just retreading what you've already done?
Right.
Or what the original series did with, oh, here's the twist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be fun to see what they do. I mean, IDW's doing a good job with the properties. I like how the people involved with the movies are, you know, connected to it. You know, and again, that Star Trek Countdown to Darkness, 14th highest-selling thing this month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may do pretty well next month when the movie's out, in the month after. We'll see.
Oh, yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I hope there's reorder activity on the other trades, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing great work. It just strikes me as if they could get the word out better, these things could sell better.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they've not kind of hit the glass ceiling by any stretch of the imagination. Whereas there are a few other properties, well, you know, I'm a little surprised sometimes how well some of these things do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll see. The other thing that was a little interesting this time around is the bottom of the list seemed a little higher than it usually is at 510 units. Often we're down closer to the 350
300,
level.
Yeah.
And again, a ton of this stuff is just reorder activity.
House of Secrets Omnibus only did 522. Jeez. That is low. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Jeez, collector's item. Snatch that book up, people.
But, you know, $75, that may have put a couple of people off and stuff.
That, yeah, but you could, you know, you can get that online discounts for 50% off at like a DCBS or somewhere like that. So.
Well, and speaking of discounts, there are a couple of things on here that were heavily discounted to the retailers.
Mm-hmm.
For example, at $299, the Marvel Zombies hardcover volume 3 there. If you look at the retail rank, it is 1109 for the retail rank. This is a $19.99 book. The item directly above it, which sold the same two-digit diamond order index level, its retail rank was 268. Now, just a quick recap. The retail ranking is how these items would rank based on the invoiced amount. The diamond order index equates to how much they sold. Okay, and in both of these cases, the estimate is around 511 units.
Mm-hmm.
So for two items, both having sold around 511 units, for one to have sold or brought at the same cover price to have brought in substantially more than the other, well, the other one had to have been heavily discounted to retailers. And there's nothing right or wrong about that. It makes sense for the publishers and Diamond or whomever to blow these things out at a fire sale price if it keeps things moving. It gives retailers stuff at a low cost to fill their shelves and, you know, whatnot. It can be a win-win all the way around for the most part. Now, whether the retailer, or not the retailers, the creators who see their royalties and wonder what the hell happened there, don't know. Did Kirkman do Marvel Zombies number volume 3? No, this was Van Lente.
Fred Van Lente, okay.
I was going to say, I'm not saying Marvel would have, but I would have been understanding if, you know, they had decided, well, that Kirkman's doing well enough on Walking Dead, so we don't need to, give full price for his zombie stuff at Marvel. Obviously they didn't do that, but you know. There were one or two other kind of big ticket items this time around. Those were they?
Well, they had a lot of those omnibuses reorders.
Yeah.
Think of something new?
No, I was mainly trying to find that one. The two were that were the $125 items.
The X-Statics one was $125, I think. I saw that on the list.
That one shocks me because, frankly, I didn't think the X-Statics, back when I was reading it monthly and stuff, is something that, I guess, they're big fans of it or whatever. $125, price tag for that just seems outrageous to me. Whereas the Fantastic Four by John Byrne, that I can understand better.
Right.
But that's just my tastes, kind of seeping in.
Ed X-Statics is a big book, though. And I know a lot of it you can find, you could probably find the whole bundle on eBay, for the original issues. But I'm glad I own that. That's a really, really fun and different book for superheroes. It's definitely not your typical stuff with the All-Red going at it. I thought it's really, really fun. So if you want something very different to read, pick up All-Red's X-Statics.
I just don't recall it having had such a following at the time to think that there would be a lot of people paying the $125 price tag.
What was the series that Havoc did in that alternate universe?
That was Mutant X.
I hope they do a collected edition of that, a big giant one of that.
That'd be a great one to do, particularly now when he's heading up Uncanny Avengers.
Yeah. I think that'd be good to do. Yeah, that's about the size of an omnibus. Didn't that run about 30 issues or so?
I was thinking it ran 25.
25, yeah.
There might have been a couple of one-shots attached to it or whatever. It would certainly fit inside of an omnibus.
Yeah, that was a fun series.
And again, it would be a very timely thing given the profile of the character right now.
Mm-hmm. And he'll be in the next X-Men movie again, coming up, Days of Future Past. So,
yeah. Well, I like it when they take something older material that's relevant in some way, shape, or form to what's currently going on in the various universes and stuff, and kind of leverage that.
That's it. I mean, look at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You don't think there's going to be an omnibus next year? You're mistaken. They'll throw those three masterworks together in one big old book.
Did they ever do a hardcover of the Battle Scars or whatever miniseries that launched that, Nick Fury?
I don't know.
If they haven't, you want to care to place a bet that they'll do it around the time of the TV show?
Yeah, that could be it. Yeah,
be great timing. And that's just that makes sense. There's a certain synergy to be had there. Price points this time around, we had 60 items at the $24.99 price point, 52 at $19.99, 50 at $14.99, and those were really the only incredibly popular price points this time around. In terms of the over $25 price range, there were 67 items, which was quite a few. But there were also 37 below the $14.99 price point, including that one that was $3.99, and that was the Marvel Universe Iron Man Comic Reader number 2, quote-unquote, trade paperback, which sold a whole 632 units. It's interesting to see the range of both price material here and diversity of material. I think there's a lot of fun stuff here, but most of these things are doing marginally. I mean, they're not doing badly. I don't think there's any cause for alarm. But when a lot of the stuff in the top 100 is reorder activity, it really makes me question: do they need to be collecting everything under the sun that comes out to begin with?
Probably not, but they're going to do it anyway. By the way, Battle Scars, John.
Mm-hmm.
Came out June 2012, and it collected the 6-issue series.
Right.
And
was that a trade or a hardcover?
It was only a trade. So maybe they're going to do a hardcover of this,
Would make sense.
If I can pull it up.
It amuses me that as they're promoting the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, they're referencing that this organization has shown up in Captain America back in the 60s and in the Ultimates, which is a completely separate narrative universe.
Right, yeah. No, collected at Battle Scars 1 through 6 and Material from Fear Itself number 7, trade paperback for $16.99 from June 13th, 2012. There you have it.
Yeah, and it was a fun read. I enjoyed it.
I didn't read it. I got to pick that up.
You should. You should. They did some fun stuff. A few things that once you realized where they were going was incredibly predictable.
Mm-hmm.
But for the first couple of issues, they did not telegraph where they were going at the end.
Mm.
But then by that fifth issue, it's like, oh, I see where you're going now. At least, you know, for me.
I did read that recent, Shield 1959 or something like that, whatever that was. That was kind of cool.
A Secret Avenger?
Had like Kraven the Hunter. And,
yeah, the Chaikin one.
Yeah, the Chaikin one was pretty good. I like that. That was a good take.
It was interesting. His art is a little too pronounced
it
at
is.
Times for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I like how they're experimenting with, you know, that time era and stuff like that. And the characters they chose made a lot of sense.
Oh, completely. Yeah, yeah.
So
what else we got?
Those were the main highlights this time around for me. I'm sure there's other stuff to be had in here, but I'll be honest, a lot of my time these days I've been spending kind of cleaning up the comic side, so I haven't been diving as deep on some of the things on the trade side. One thing I do want to point out real quick is at rank 177, Brody's Ghost Volume 4 trade paperback. This was originally released at the tail end of March. 814 units. This is by Mark Crilly, who did Akiko and the Planet Shmoo. Good stuff. This is in a smaller, almost manga kind of a format. I think it's about an 80-page page count or whatever, so kind of a little thin compared to a Japanese manga. But, you know, he's not Japanese, so hey.
I know I have one of these. I think maybe issue 1 and 2 of this that I got in the 11 o'clock comics gift exchange. So I haven't read it yet, though, but I do have to go back and read it. I got to do a lot of catching up.
I really recommend it. It's fun stuff. The guy is just a fantastic artist and a great storyteller. And this is the sort of thing, if it had been on the comics list, would have been so far under the radar as to be, just sad. Because, I mean, it's $6.99 for about 80 pages or so a story. I mean, it's a great deal. It's black and white, but, I mean, it fits the material great.
Boy, just a lot of reorder stuff today.
That really was what surprised me. And, again, some of this was at fire sale prices. Some of it was not. A lot of it was not.
I'm reworking your spreadsheet just to look at the new comics coming out.
And again, that really shortens the list now, doesn't it? It
does. No, it completely shortens it, yeah.
111 items. And again, I expect to have a lot of reorder activity and stuff, but even a few of the things that are reorder, or not reorders, new material and stuff, like at rank 207, the Iron Man 2020 trade paperback. Mm-hmm. And that's older material.
Yes.
That's
a fun read, though. Those stories are really fun.
Yeah. That's actually something I would consider using for, like, a new Iron Man movie, particularly if they shifted away from the actor whose name I am blanking on right now.
Who, Downey?
Downey, yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you did an Arno Stark versus Tony, it would give you enough of a shift that you could get a new actor in there as Tony if you needed to. Hopefully
okay,
they won't need
here's,
to.
Okay, here's my take. You saw Iron Man 3, right?
No, I have not.
Okay. Then I really... I don't know if
then
I
don't tell me.
No, it doesn't happen. That's the thing. It's something that I wanted to happen, but it didn't happen. So I don't know if I should tell you this anyway. Nah,
well, at this point, they're, I think, in talks to determine if they're going to keep paying Downey what, frankly, he deserves.
No, it had nothing to do with Downey.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, because there's no spoiler, because it's not going to happen. There's a kid in the movie, okay, that he meets in Tennessee. I thought the kid was going to be Arno. I thought I was hoping that would happen. That you'd find the kid and his name would be Arnold, Arno.
Arno
the,
was supposed to be
kid
his
would grow
grandson.
Up. No, it's just, yeah, it's a, yeah, but it's, I was hoping that the cinematic universe it would lean towards that. So in 10 years, Arno Stark could be this kid growing up, you know, but it didn't happen. So, you know.
It's fun how they're doing a lot of things that are very similar to the comics and a lot of things that are very different. It's also interesting when stuff they've been doing in the comic, or in the movies, I mean, becomes very common in the comics. The whole...
Like Hawkeye? I mean, the whole Avengers. I mean, my gosh.
Well, everything with the way Tony's suit gets taken off now in some of the Avenger books.
Yeah.
You know, and I get referencing the movie and stuff, but there comes a point where that takes over as the...
Well, are they going to get rid of the Ultimate Universe? I mean, what is going on with that prop? Because that was supposed to be like the quote-unquote cinematic universe when it first came out.
Well, when it first came out, it was supposed to be something that had no baggage, easy on-ramp.
Yeah.
We're now well in, you know, 10 years into it, so it's got a lot of baggage. It's also diverged enough from kind of the world outside your window, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But they keep doing new story arcs, and I think what they've decided to kind of do de facto, whether it was a conscious decision or not, is this is where almost anything can go. They can do all sorts of, you know, let's flood Manhattan type stories.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And there are limited repercussions at best.
Or kill off Peter Parker and put Miles Morales in there or something like that. Yeah, I mean, they're...
Yeah, tell stories you would like to tell but can't in the mainstream Marvel Universe.
Yeah, yeah, there's no way they're going to do that. But I just think it's funny how they had a Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury in the Ultimate Universe, and now they have a Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury in the 616, you know?
Well, and what's funny,
it's funny
is
how that happened.
As soon as they did that in the Ultimate Universe, he was using an image thing to look like the mainstream Marvel Universe Nick Fury.
Oh, Nick Fury's white now in the...
No, he was just using it as a disguise for a few issues.
Oh, I see.
But it's okay. One of those that's like they had flipped places at one point, and it's like, wow, this is getting confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah. Huh. About the only other thing that's probably worth mentioning is at rank 85, and that's the Rocket Raccoon and Groot Complete Collection trade paperback.
Gotta like that.
Gotta like that. 1,387 units. So apparently a fair number of people did like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun characters.
They're great, yeah.
So.
Well, this is a fun collection because, you know, I'm sure a lot of people wanted to read the most recent issues. But, you know, this collected the Groot story from what Strange Tales,
mm-hmm.
and also the original Rocket Raccoon 4-issue miniseries. So this goes back to the 1950s, which is great to see. This is the kind of collection I really, really like.
Yeah, you know? It covers stuff that you can't just go to, I don't want to say your local comic store with the back issue selection, because many don't have that, but things that otherwise hadn't been collected, things that you can't really easily find the back issues of.
Right.
And again, stuff that's relevant given, you know, the new Guardians of the Galaxy storyline or series and stuff out there. I mean, that's a win-win for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really hope this gets reorder activity, you know, in the next month. You know, maybe not, but maybe next year when the movie comes out.
I was going to say, maybe when the movie comes out. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, and not only that, but the Guardians of the Galaxy, those soft covers are coming out too, the original of those.
Which original? The early stuff?
The early stuff is coming out, yeah.
The Valentino era.
Yeah. The original. Let me pull it up really quick.
Was that in Marvel Spotlight? Tales or whichever Marvel anthology it was at the time. I always get those confused.
Let's see.
Although the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff is worth reading. I think the Valentino stuff was a little Star Trek-y at times.
I think it already came out. I think it did. Let's see, Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, Tomorrow's Avengers Volume 1. Marvel Super Heroes from 1967-18. 2-in-1, 5-in-4. Giant Size Defenders. Defenders 26 through 29. Marvel Presents 3-12, which I'm sure you own. I'm sure you own all these. And then, yeah, in March, Part 2 came out that collects the Thor Annual 6, Avengers 167, 168, 170 through 177 and 181, and a few other stories. Yeah, so those are done in two big old trade paperbacks.
I own many of those. I don't know that I own all of those.
Yeah.
A lot of my Marvel stuff is spotty on some of the more anthology type titles and whatnot pre Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I go way back on you know, some of the, you know, Cap and a few other titles and stuff, but not as far back on a lot of the Marvel stuff, and particularly the 70s era, that is I might at some point.
Well, I would like to see Marvel continue the Guardians of the Galaxy's books. You know, they've got the team proper books out. They got Groot out. Maybe they can do a Captain Universe, or you know, a something like that. You know, something a Drax collection or something like that. I think that'd be kind of fun.
Well, and Captain Universe would be a great thing to do, since the character's kind of sort of showing up in the Avengers.
Right, and they did the Nova series, but that was only an essential. They don't have any color ones out. They have the Masterworks out, but you know they really need to do some big old soft cover of that stuff.
Well, I got a lot of like the Invaders Classics trade paperbacks and stuff.
Yeah,
and
those
I think
are good.
They should be doing that with. Again, like you said, Nova and a lot of these other properties.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, they did one for Nick Fury. The Nick Fury of S.H.I.E.L.D. that takes place after Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
That they did one trade paperback of that. And I think that series ran for, 40 issues, 50 issues, something like that. And there's only been one. So hopefully they're going to ramp that up and put more out with the...
If they're not doing that leading up to the TV show, they're fools.
They're foolish, right.
And they got brains. They're going to do it.
Yeah, they'll do something. Yeah. Even though Nick Fury won't be in it, I mean, you think he'll make a cameo. I mean, my God, you know.
At the very least, a voiceover occasionally.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And even if not that, he will be referenced a lot, I've got to imagine.
Oh, I'm sure all the heroes will be referenced a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to the TV show. It should be a lot of fun.
It's going to be good. When's that going to air? Is it going to air in the fall? Or
I believe so. It's gotten officially picked up for
a
full season, yeah.
Cool.
So definitely should be fun. So what you got coming up on your show these days?
On my show, well, I just did all my C2E2 coverage.
Cool.
That is all set. And
I should really go to C2E2 next year. Remind me.
You totally should. And then coming up this week... I've got an interview with the guys from Valiant Entertainment, so that'll be a lot of fun talking about just the history of Valiant, which there is a ton of.
Oh yeah.
But I do want to focus more on their new stuff coming out. But you have to, whenever you talk about Valiant, you got to talk about their history. And also with that in mind, their hardcovers of older material. To their Valiant Masters, as they're calling it. So it's going to be a lot of fun talking to those guys.
It should be a lot of fun. I think they're doing a great job. I appreciate how they're being, you know, doing new stuff, yet being respectful to the older history and getting that back out there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the big questions I would have for them is, do they own the entire library of material, lock, stock, and barrel, aside from, obviously, Solar,
right.
Magnus, and Turok, which, you know, was another... you know, license that Valiant had originally.
Mm-hmm.
So just how big is the library they've got they can pull out? Obviously, with Quantum and Woody, it looks pretty deep.
Yeah.
But then the big question I would have is, aren't they even the slightest bit concerned about heading to Unity so quickly, since that's what more or less killed the last go-round on Valiant?
Right, yeah.
Because that was Unity 2000. It was supposed to be 6 issues, and I think 3 came out before it fizzled.
Right.
I'm not worried about this one fizzling. They're doing great. They're doing a lot of very top quality stuff.
Right.
I'm just curious kind of what their guiding principles are as to how quickly they grow, what do they put out, and so forth. But that should be a
I will
fun
ask
interview.
Them that, John.
Cool.
But yeah, what about you? What's coming up on you? You've got some news and some changes for sure.
Definitely have some changes. Let's see. This will go up on Friday. So Monday's episode will be Bob's last one for the Weekly Comics Spotlight. That'll be Weekly Comics Spotlight 300. He's got, you know, other things he wants to be doing, so he'll be stepping down. We're going to have a back issue spotlight. We haven't done one of those in ages. Bob and I had done one in celebration of Weekly Comic Spotlight 200, so we decided we would do one for Weekly Comic Spotlight 300, celebrating issue 300s. And then with, you know, Weekly Comic Spotlight 301, I found somebody who's going to, you know, help me out with that, whether stick with that person or rotate some other people through. Really, at this point, I don't know. I'm looking for feedback when that episode goes up. And then I had Derek this time around from the Comics Alternative help out on the Mayo Report Comics Edition, and I may rotate some other people through. I've actually had a lot of people interested in doing that episode. I found that very interesting. So yeah, definitely some changes coming about. I did the last preview spotlight solo, and if somebody steps up and says, "Man, I really want to do that," I'll take a co-host for that. But otherwise, I may just do that by myself. Because really, at the end, it's a yep, I'm getting some comics. You know, it's not like there's a huge need for a co-host as much there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think certainly talking the numbers and certainly reviewing comics, having kind of another opinion, helps a lot. So yeah, definitely some changes going on, you know, I'm still doing the podcast, going to keep going with that, been enjoying it and stuff, and it started, the Comic Book Page podcast started before Bob got on and will continue after he leaves,
mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it's been a long run. It's been very good.
It has. And as you can well attest, doing a podcast, you know, week in, week out, Bob and I have been doing it, you know, 5.5 years. That's a lot of time, and it's easy to get a little burnt out. And,
absolutely.
So, you know, it's, you know, we're going to have some change, and hopefully I'll get some good listener input and feedback as to what's working and what's not. I've already gotten a lot of people stepping up interested in co-hosting and helping out in a couple of different ways, which I really appreciate. So,
good deal.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think we're good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isduh't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlogic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.